Gentlemen, ready to go? Oh, hold on. Give me 1 second. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. My name's Alan Gordon, representing State Controller John Chung. I'm joined today by Lieutenant Governor's Representative Kevin Schmidt to my right, and Irena Ortega, representing the Department of Finance, to my left. For the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. Specifically, the commission has jurisdiction in filled and unfilled tide and submerged lands, navigable waterways, and state school lands. The commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms, and for the prevention of the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations concerning the leasing, management, and regulation of these public sovereign and school land property interests and the activities occurring or proposed thereon. Well, now, and now for all of you in the audience, we will now adjourn into closed session. We'll see you all in a little bit. No, it's not too many so far. So far, they're always going to trickle in as we go. Everybody ready to go? Everybody, please take a seat. I call this meeting back to order. Ms. Lucchesi, anything to report from closed session?
Yes, sir. This is Mark Meyer, the commission's chief counsel. The commission authorized settlement in two cases. The first is California State Lands Commission versus Clark. And that settlement is reflected in item C-49 on the commission's agenda today. And the second settlement was the state of California versus Singer, and that settlement is reflected in item C-52 on the agenda.
Thank you. Next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the commission's meeting of October 14th. May I have a motion? Before I do that, let me explain one thing about the voting procedures of the commission under state law, because none of the principals are here. Ms. Ortega from the Department of Finance will be able to vote on all measures, but with the Lieutenant Governor's office and the Controller's office, only one of us can vote, okay? So the fact that one of us will be silent does not mean opposition. It simply means that we are prohibited from voting, all right? So the next order of business is the adoption of the minutes from October 14th, 2014. May I have a motion to approve, please?
I'll move approval of the minutes.
All those in favor? Oh, I need a second.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes are unanimously adopted. Next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchesi, may we please have the report?
Yes. So I have a couple of things to report, so bear with me here. First, California recently celebrated the 20th anniversary of the landmark California Desert Protection Act. Signed into law on October 31st in 1994 and sponsored by Senator Feinstein, the California Desert Protection Act increased protection for 8.6 million acres of California desert. California's deserts are home to many of the school lands under the Commission's jurisdiction. The Act benefited the Commission's management of these lands by directing the Secretary, upon request of the Commission, to negotiate exchanges for certain federal lands for other California state school lands located within the boundaries of wilderness areas or park units designated by the Act. Senator Feinstein is renewing her effort to protect the California desert. She intends to introduce the California Desert Conservation and Recreation Act on the first day of the 2015 Senate session. Commission staff has reviewed the proposed legislation and looks forward to working with Senator Feinstein and her staff on this effort. Next, I want to report on receiving the final payment from the U.S. government regarding our holdings or former holdings in Elk Hills. Approximately 47,000 acres of school lands near Bakersfield. The resolution of this final payment marks the end of many, many years of hard work by the Attorney General's Office and the State Lands Commission. Just as quick background, then Lieutenant Governor Leo McCarthy announced California's lawsuit against the U.S. seeking payment for oil being pumped from Section 16 and 36, which are school lands under the jurisdiction and trusteeship of the State Lands Commission in the federal Elk Hills Naval Petroleum Reserve. Basically, the U.S. was ignoring its obligations to California. And in fact, for complicated reasons, the case was a long shot and was instituted to try and get the United States to talk to California. When the State Lands Commission lost, as we expected, in district court on a procedural ground, the commission decided not to appeal for fear of a bad precedent. But when the United States decided to sell its Elk Hill holdings in 1996, the commission and the AG's office had another opening. We made it clear that California still claimed title to those sections 16 and 36, and that our claims would significantly impact the marketability of Elk Hills. The commission and the AG's office engaged in negotiations with the United States and finally obtained a very favorable settlement, 9% of sales proceeds. At the U.S.'s insistence, it called for 10 payments, all subject to congressional appropriations. We recently received our last payment as a result of the omnibus appropriations legislation for fiscal year 2015, released last week. That money goes to CalSTRS, and with this last payment of $15.5 million appropriated, California will have received a total of $315,522,000 into CalSTRS for the benefit of the state's teachers. Another federal action that I want to report on, the United States Supreme Court recently entered the joint supplemental decree submitted by the United States Solicitor General's Office and the California State Lands Commission represented by the Attorney General's Office in the case of the United States versus California, thereby fixing the offshore boundary between the United States and California. The dispute over the location of the offshore boundary began with the discovery of oil in Wilmington, California in 1935. After the landmark 1947 U.S. Supreme Court decision, United States versus California, followed by the enactment of the Submerged Lands Act in 1953, the State Lands Commission and the Attorney General's Office has been working with the federal government to locate the boundary since 1955. With the Supreme Court's action, there is now a fixed boundary off the coast of California extending from Mexico to Oregon. Having a fixed boundary will provide certainty to state and federal lessors, regulators, lessees, and operators of federal and state mineral and renewable energy leasing programs, and will prevent future litigation concerning the submerged lands rights of the parties. The State Lands Commission is extremely pleased that the United States and the State Lands Commission and the Attorney General's Office were able to partner to achieve the certainty to all stakeholders inherent in fixing this boundary. I want to especially thank Christina Ballant, Supervising Deputy Attorney General, and Jessica Rader, our State Lands Senior Attorney, for their hard work in seeing this final effort through to completion, along with the many, many hours and hard work of former Deputy Attorney Generals and State Lands staff. And finally, I want to thank the United States Solicitor General's Office, the Department of the Interior, and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management for their essential partnership in this endeavor. Next, I want to provide an update to the Commission and the public involving the Paradise Cove Pier lease compliance in Malibu. Through our close partnership with the Coastal Commission in protecting the public's access to California's coast, the State Lands Commission received a couple months ago information that one of the Commission's lessees, Paradise Cove Land Company, was charging a walk-in fee to access Paradise Cove Pier and the associated public tidelands. They prohibited surfers and surfboards and closed access to the pier through the use of a gate, all in violation of their lease with the State Lands Commission. Commission staff sent a notice of the lease violation to Paradise Cove Land Company on October 31st. On that same day, Coastal Commission staff sent a notice of violation to the land company alleging various Coastal Act violations. After receiving these notices and meeting with both state land staff and coastal staff, the Paradise Cove Land Company took immediate steps to remove signs prohibiting surfers and surfboards, stop charging a walk-in fee, open the gate on the pier, and made changes to their website so that the public was not discouraged from accessing the public lands at this location. I want to highlight that this is a prime example of the cooperative working relationship between the Coastal Commission staff and the State Lands Commission staff that has resulted in the protection of California's coast. Commission staff will continue to monitor Paradise Cove Land Company's compliance with the terms of its lease to ensure that public access is provided to the statewide public year-round and free of charge, especially as summer approaches, and that all other terms of its lease are being complied with. Next, I want to provide an update on the Rancho LPG facility adjacent to the Port of Los Angeles. Commission staff has been in contact with Plains All-American representatives and is working on the possibility of doing an in-camera review of their insurance policy with the help of the Attorney General's office. Commission staff has sent comments back on the proposed guarantee agreement, but is unsure if Plains All-American is willing to go forward with the agreement. Commission staff is still in contact with the Port of Los Angeles in order to better understand how they assess whether insurance coverage required under their permits is adequate. Commission staff has received a copy of the PHL permit, which is one of the permits that the Rancho facility utilizes, with the port as well as the different levels of insurance required for the rail lines. The PHL permit has requirements as to where cars carrying hazardous materials can be loaded, unloaded, and stored on port property, and clearly contemplates the transport of hazardous materials on the rail line consistent with all federal and state regulations. The Los Angeles Certified Unified Program Agencies, the CUPA, for the Rancho facility is the Los Angeles Fire Department. They currently permit the facility for California Accidental Release Prevention Program, hazardous waste, and hazardous material. The Los Angeles Fire Department is the entity that has the prime responsibility for inspecting the facility and enforcing federal and state laws and regulations for hazardous materials. The products on the Rancho LPG facility are considered hazardous because they are flammable compressed gas. As part of the California Accidental Release Prevention Program, permit, the CUPA inspects the Rancho facility every 3 years. The CUPA's last inspection of the facility was on August 5, 2014, and they found no violations. Also, as part of the program's permit, the Rancho LPG facility must submit a risk management plan. The risk management plan must be updated and submitted to the CUPA every 5 years. The risk management plan is also required by the US EPA. And is a public document that can be requested through the CUPA. However, to review this plan, you must go to those offices and view the document at that location. As part of the hazardous materials permit, the Rancho LPG facility must submit a business plan that includes emergency response plans. Between the business plan and the risk management plan, the CUPA has reviewed emergency response plans, fire plans, evacuation plans, and other items that can be found on the sample form for the business plan on the CUPA Fire Department website. In addition to contacting the CUPA for Rancho LPG facility, Commission staff has conducted a site visit of the rail line adjacent to the facility in October. I have two more items to mention. This is long compared to what it usually is. I want to acknowledge and honor and thank Deputy Attorney General Alan Hager. Alan Hager has been with the Attorney General's office. I'm not sure if he's here, but he has been with the Attorney General's office since the mid-1970s, working on state lands issues since that time, since the beginning. He is our expert on oil and gas law and in California, primarily focusing on the Long Beach unit and the Wilmington oil properties. In 2001, he actually became our liaison, the AG's office liaison to the State Lands Commission. Joe took over for him when Alan officially retired from the AG's office. But Alan came back as a retired annuitant to work on state lands issues as well as to help the Attorney General's office out. He is going to retire for real at the end of this year. And after 30 plus years of supporting, advocating, and working on behalf of the State Lands Commission, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge him and to thank him for his service. He not only provided excellent advice on oil and gas issues for the State Lands Commission, but he was also integral in general public trust issues, especially in San Francisco, where he helped with the development of Piers 1 and a half, 3 and 5, and the exploratorium on Piers 15 and 17, and was also instrumental in helping the State Lands Commission navigate the legislation that facilitated the America's Cup. So I wanted to thank him. And finally, last but not least, I want to acknowledge that today will be the last day that Alan, or the last commission meeting that Alan will be representing the State Comptroller's Office on the State Lands Commission. And I want to acknowledge and thank Comptroller Chung for his 8 years of service and leadership to the public through his role on the State Lands Commission, and Deputy Comptroller Gordon for his 3 years of service on the commission. As chair of the State Lands Commission every other year, Comptroller Chung and Deputy Comptroller Gordon had significant impact on the State Lands Commission's environmental policies, especially as they related to sea level rise, new offshore oil and gas development, protection of California's water from oil spills and marine invasive species, and public access. Both Comptroller Chung and Deputy Comptroller Gordon were always able to find just the right balance of various statewide interests when managing the state's public trust in school lands and resources, always coming to a decision that was in the best interest of all Californians. On behalf of the State Lands staff, I wish Comptroller Chung and Deputy Comptroller Gordon the best as they move on to the Treasurer's office. The State Lands Commission staff and the Commission will surely miss you, but the citizens of California will continue to benefit from your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I really like, on the flip side of that, I'd really like to thank Ms. Lucchese, her predecessor, Curtis Fossum, Chief Counsel Mark Meyer, the Attorney General's Office, Joe Rusconi, all of the staff. I mean, I, like so many people in California, we're not all that familiar with all of the work that the State Lands Commission does until I took this job 3.5 years ago, and have come to just value the experience, the expertise, the dedication, the professionalism of State Lands staff. They represent the best of what public service has to offer in this state, and it has truly been a pleasure and an honor to work with all of you. There aren't any words to describe how the quality I think that these folks bring to their jobs. The only other person I'd like to thank is the person who actually makes this entire thing go, Kim Lunetta, who is why when we have meetings, they all run incredibly smoothly. I always feel like I am completely up to date on all the things I need to know, and it's sort of herding cats sometimes that Kim has to do, and I'd like to thank her personally. And anyway, I guess that's it. This will be my last meeting, and then I will move on to a deputy treasurer's job. But thank all of you, and it's really been an honor. Thanks. Next, next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Ms. Lucchese, can you please identify which items, if any, have been removed from that calendar?
Yes. C08, C26, C36, C57, and 73 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time. At this point, I don't have any that are being moved from the consent agenda to the regular agenda.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak on an item on the consent calendar? If not, we'll now proceed to the vote. May I have a motion on the consent calendar minus the items that were just removed by Ms. Lucchese.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Can you take this to Alan? Before you vote, just received a request to speak on item C66.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they want to speak during, it's a little confusing. I'm not sure if they want to speak on the item or speak during the public comment session.
Mr. Deals, it looks like. Is he available? Mr. Deals, did you want to speak now or did you want to wait till a public comment?
I'm not really sure. I have some related information. It could probably go to a public comment. I think that would
okay.
be fine.
On
the item or in the general public
comment? I think it's general. It's parallel but not directly related.
Okay, we'll put
okay.
you down on
okay,
your public
thank
comment.
You very much.
Okay, so we will keep C66 on the consent agenda.
Okay, 66 is on there. All right, so we have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Next order of business is going to be the regular calendar. Item 71 is to consider an application for a general lease of sovereign land located in the Pacific Ocean near the city of Marina in Monterey County for the construction, operation, and decommissioning of a temporary exploratory test slant water well. May we have the staff presentation, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Ken Foster. I'm a public land manager with the Commission's Land Management Division. I'm here to present information on calendar item C71. This item asks the Commission to authorize a general lease right-of-way use to California American Water Company, or CalAM, for the construction, operation, and decommissioning of a temporary exploratory test slant water well located on state-owned sovereign lands in Monterey Bay near the city of Marina.
Just the ocean, or is there supposed to be another picture?
There we go.
Okay, here we go. We're on track with the slides. So CalAM's test well will be located along the shoreline of Monterey Bay near the city of Marina within an area that has historically been used for sand mining. The test well insertion point will be located on the CEMEX property on the upland outside of the Commission's jurisdiction, approximately 650 feet from the shoreline. The well will be drilled downward at a 19-degree angle for a length of up to approximately 1,000 feet and to a depth of approximately 290 feet below the Monterey Bay seafloor. A dual rotary closed system drilling method will be utilized with a 20-inch diameter casing and 14-inch diameter well screen. Approximately 228 lineal feet of the test well will be located on sovereign land beneath Monterey Bay. Discharge water pumped from the test well will be sent to an existing 60-inch diameter ocean outfall operated by the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, and that outfall is that long yellow line extending from the shoreline to the red area out in the ocean. CalAM is proposing the test well project to determine the feasibility of using a subsurface intake system at the project site or nearby for use in a potential future desalination facility. That's the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project. The proposed test well project will be concluded within 24 to 28 months. At the conclusion of the testing period, CalAM will be required to obtain commission authorization for a lease termination and abandonment agreement for the long-term care and maintenance of the test well. At this time, staff recommends approval of the construction, operation, and decommissioning of a temporary exploratory test slant water well. Staff is available to answer any questions you may have. Representatives from CalAM are also here and are prepared to make a brief presentation and answer questions as well.
Why don't we bring CalAM up at this point?
Good afternoon, Chairman and members, commissioners, staff. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I have a presentation. So my name is Rich Svendlin. I'm the Vice President of Engineering for California American Water. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'll be fairly brief unless there's questions. Staff did a nice job of this describing what we're trying to do here. But But I would like to say at the heart of this project, this is really an environmental project. We've been ordered by the State Water Resources Control Board to get off the Carmel River. We have legal rights there, but we've been pumping over them for many, many years. After many, many studies, a desalination plant was determined to be the best solution for this area. That's what we're trying to do. In keeping with the request of the California Coastal Commission, the State Water Resources Control Board, NOAA Fisheries, subsurface intakes is what everybody wants. We're trying to do that. So this test well is basically the beginning steps of doing that. Mr. Foster talked about our project, the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project. Basically, we're trying to do three components to solve the water supply solution for Monterey Bay. Desalination is a part of it. Groundwater replenishment is a part of it, and also aquifer storage and recovery. So it's not just a big desal plant, it's a little bit of everything. Our project is currently, the larger project is currently being reviewed by the California Public Utilities Commission. They're working on the EIR. That's a draft that's expected to come out next year. The customers on the coast in the Monterey Peninsula are conserving water. They're doing their best. They want to have one of the lowest uses in the state, and we're proud of that. So we're not building this to supply water for everybody. It's really just to get off the Carmel River. The project has broad support. I listed some of our favorite companies right up top, Surfrider, Sierra Club, San Luis Valley Water Coalition. We've met with a lot of people to get support for this project. This is pretty unusual. All these parties signed a settlement agreement, and that settlement agreement said slant wells at the Semec site's the preferred option to go with. So that's why we're here today. We've also got some strong political support. So Congressman Farr, Senator Bill Monning, Assembly Member Mark Stone, mayors, a couple of newspapers are supporting our project. State Water Resources Control Board sent a letter of support to the Coastal Commission, you know, for this project to be approved. And recently, the California Department of Water Resources awarded us $1 million grant to help fund this construction for this very test well. In their mind, this is vital to learning how these wells work across the state. Okay, I'll review that. So Mr. Foster also talked about this is kind of the project overall. We are at an active sand mine site. They're sand mining today. We worked out an option agreement with them to let us do this test well. If it doesn't work out, we go away. If it does work out, we have in the option permission to put more wells here. That would be a supplemental application to the State Lands Commission if those work out. Pictorially, currently, based on what we know, we did some boreholes, and we applied for this permit actually a couple years ago, and so things have changed. We probably won't go 1,000 feet out. We probably will only go about 760 feet out. We're about 650 feet inland, so we're going to go out into the ocean a little bit, but not. We don't really know. Ultimately, it's going to depend on how the borehole, the pilot hole goes. The goal of the project is to get seawater to come through the ocean floor, and we're trying to target hitting a spot of 35,000 TDS. We have a very extensive monitoring program. There's been some concerns from different folks of how you're going to make sure you don't impact us. We have a cluster of monitoring wells that we're building so we can watch what happens when we turn this well on. We have the ability to turn the well off. We have the ability to slow the well, you know, speed it up or slow it down, depending on what's going on. In conclusion, again, thanks for the opportunity to speak today, and appreciate the staff's support, and thanks for your consideration.
What do you anticipate the cost of this water will be per acre foot?
For the entire Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project?
Yeah.
We're right in that 4,000 per acre foot range.
Right that high. All right. The Carlsbad facility that came online here in Orange County, or is in the process of being built here in Orange County, has a contract at, I think, about $2,400 an acre foot. Do you know what is the difference in what is the technology additions? Now that project has been greatly opposed by a lot of folks in the environmental community. This one's got a lot of support. What are the additional environmental controls you have on there? I know you're doing subsurface as opposed to regular intake. Is that the whole difference in cost, or what is the?
Not necessarily. Our project has a lot of pipelines. I mean, we're reversing flow from the Carmel. We've been gravity fed from the San Clemente Dam. I don't know if you got to see the San Francisco Chronicle article on Monday. We reached a great milestone this week with that project, but that's coming out. And so we've always been gravity flow from the south up north. We're reversing flow and we're going from the north down south. So we have over $150 million just in piping cost and tanks and wells that we have to work on. It's not just desal.
Okay.
If we looked at the desal cost alone, the plant, we're under $2,000 an acre for that part of it.
Okay, so it's the other pieces that are adding the cost. Right. What, does Cal-Am, assuming this is successful, do you have other sites in the state that you are considering for desal right now?
No, we are a regulated utility. We have a footprint that's dictated by the California Public Utilities Commission, and that's where we're planning on staying within our footprint. So at this point, we don't have any plans in any other locations for desalination plants. Certainly, if people want to talk to us, we would would be interested. But no, our this is our project to solve the water supply for Monterey.
Congratulations. I mean, I looking at the support here, I've been involved in a lot of desal issues over the years, and you seem to have built a good project. I hope it succeeds.
Thank you.
Do we have any opposition? Anybody, any in the party in the public who would like to speak on this item? Anybody in support? Anybody in opposition? That being the case, do I have a motion? We have a motion.
Second.
And a second.
Do you want to vote? Or
I'll vote on this one. all those in favor? Aye. That passes with unanimous approval, and good luck going forward. Okay. Next item of business is item 72, to consider certification of a final environmental impact report for the revised PRC 421 recommissioning project by Venico Oil. Here we have the staff presentation, please.
Commissioners, my name is Seth Blackman. I'm the staff attorney dealing with the issue in Venico. We have a presentation coming up here. Before we get started, I think it's important to note you've heard a lot about this project over the last 8 months. There's been a lot of work that's been done. At our April 23rd meeting in Los Angeles, we were directed by the commission to go back and look at the Los Flores Canyon alternative in greater detail and really kind of evaluate that in the context of the entire project because there was some concern. And I think that not only was that completed, we also were asked to review a little bit of the discussion that we had in the then EIR, the then final EIR, regarding repressurization, greenhouse gas mitigation measures, and also the EOF as a legal nonconforming use. All of that has happened since that time. And so where we are today, we are coming back to you with a final environmental impact report that's been revised from the original January 14th EIR that you first heard in April on April 23rd. And it really does build and address a lot of the fundamental issues from the prior EIR. The current final EIR really helps to clarify what's going on out on the shoreline relative to PRC 421 and kind of the other issues that reside for the city of Goleta and others relative to the Elwood onshore facility. Again, as we noted, the one of the things that was added or modified to the current final EIR is a separate standalone discussion of the Vaqueros Reservoir repressurization. We moved this from the project description discussion, because it is not part of the project, to the safety section under 4.2 in the EIR, because it's really an identification of an impact that is a what we believe a real impact, a very possible impact that needs additional study, and it represents a safety risk to the region in general, and we think that was important to identify. The other thing that was added was the breakout of the alternative analysis, where we, again, dealt with the Los Flores Canyon, but also redefined the no project alternative to make this more clear. And I think this is important both for the commission staff and the community at large to understand that currently, Venico already holds a lease. They've held a lease with the State Lands Commission since 1949. That lease is in full force and effect, and they have vested rights under that lease to produce. They're not only obligated, but we would require it of them once all appropriate corrective measures had been taken. And I'll come back to that a little bit more. We also identified a no production quit claims alternative, which identifies a point at which the State Lands Commission chooses to buy out Venico's interest so that no production would move forward. And again, this is addressed in the EIR at some length. Finally, we have the processing of oil at the Los Flores Canyon alternative, which we will be talking a lot more about in this presentation, because that was the big focal point in April 23rd, at the April 23rd meeting, and because it really weighs on the question about the legal nonconforming use of the Elwood onshore facility. A little bit to start with on the repressurization. We have, just so you also know, we have our Mineral Resources Management Division staff here, engineers who are both petroleum engineers and other, to speak to this in greater technical detail if interested. So if at any time you want that, please let us know. One of the big issues here is that we have empirical data of increasing pressure in the Vaqueros Formation from 1987 to 2000. That was because that was the term at which that particular well was producing oil, and we were able to actually monitor the repressurization. And we know, like I said, for a fact, empirically, that repressurization was occurring. One of the big critiques is that we don't have any other additional data from that point in time, and that's true. It's been shut in. We don't have a way in which to monitor the actual reservoir repressurization absent the production of oil. Again, our engineers can speak to that in a much greater detail, but the reality is there's no way to get a actual reservoir pressure without that production, because the production allows for a depressurization in the reservoir, which then allows us to study the increasing pressure once that depressurization has occurred. And so we don't have data. One of the benefits of the current project as proposed is that Venico has agreed to a monitoring program for the repressurization so that we have a better idea of what to do about this as we move forward, because this is a problem that's not going to go away as a result of this project. And I think we've been pretty upfront about that. But in order to really kind of craft future solutions and work with the city of Goleta and other interested parties, we need a better data source on what's happening out there with that reservoir. And also to know whether or not once we reach an equilibrium point or a static pressure, whether the existing wells that are out there that were abandoned, you know, 70 years ago really will withstand the pressures of a fully repressurized reservoir. We don't know. So we're hoping to utilize this information through the project to get a better handle on how to move forward in the future. I think this kind of is just a simple, basic timeline. The 421 was actually first entered into in 1929. It was one of the first oil and gas leases. It was State Lease 85. And then was extended and renewed in 1949 by the State Lands Commission as PRC 421. It's pretty well known that in May of 1994, there was an onshore spill on the Sandpiper Golf Course on the 12th tee, upland, out of the shoreline, but still a spill from the 6-inch flow line, at which time the then owner-operator shut in 421 and waited for commission approval to resume. This is an aerial view of the entire area. You'll notice the two bottom circles represent the piers from an aerial view. The small circle over to my left, as you're looking at this, is the 12th hole, or the 12th tee of the Sandpiper Golf Course where the spill occurred. And then, as you can see, sort of the triangular wedge is the Elwood Onshore Facility, or the EOF. And this just sort of gives you a representation. You can also see, aside from the Sandpiper Golf Course, the homes that have been built out just down coast and inland some, and then up coast of this is the Bacara Resort. So in the year 2000, there was a methane leak that was identified by the Air Pollution Control District in Santa Barbara, which led to an identification that the wellhead as it sat in 2000 was basically in severe need of repair. It was leaking, and this also led to the fact that when we and Venico went in to do the repairs, that there was actually significant pressure and oil pressure that was building up. In order to do the repairs, they had to actually freely flow the production of oil, about 17,000 barrels of oil over a 10-month period, in order to go in and safely do the repair work. And then there's a series of other repairs, including the new seaward-facing caissons and the seawalls, that over many, many years had finally kind of given up the ghost. Again, another kind of current view of the Piers 421-1 and Pier 421-2. This is as they currently set. This is after they have been repaired significantly. This shows the caissons as they've been repaired and the current seawalls with the new replacement of the concrete portions that surround the well cellar. Again, a little bit more upfront picture. The picture on the bottom left-hand corner of the screen shows the repair work of the concrete in 2011 that was going on the seawall face. All of that was done to current code, both seismic and wave loading. This is, again, our engineers can talk more about this. And all of the pylons and the existing pier infrastructure was rehabilitated over from 2004 on through 2011. So a lot of work has been done by Venico to secure and create a safe operating environment, at least as far as the piers are concerned. The chronology of events, I think, is very important as well. We've identified that throughout the entire process of the EIR, which started back in 2004, the City of Goleta and the Coastal Commission have been involved with the State Lands Commission staff in a joint review panel. They've actively participated in multiple reviews of administrative drafts and public drafts and comments. And I think this is a beginning. We have another page just to kind of identify that the number of public meetings and attempts at public outreach that staff has engaged in relative to the Venico project. As you can see, in 2013 and 2014, we really engaged heavily with the public, spent significant time meeting with Venico and the city to kind of hammer out mitigation monitoring programs and really kind of try and facilitate forward movement of the project. So what we're faced with in the current project is the repair of the equipment and improvements at Pier and Well 421-2 along the access road and the delivery pipeline. Some limited improvements to the Elwood Onshore facility in the way, as we see here, of power equipment and monitoring control system and pressurization monitoring in the context of the Vaqueros Reservoir. I think it's very important. We've want to reiterate this because I think a lot of people are unclear. There is no new drilling associated with this program at all. There will be no new wells. It is the existing well, well 421-2. Additionally, there will be no hydraulic fracturing, matrix acidization, or acid fracking stimulation treatments as a result of resuming production on well 421-2. The other part of this is that if the State Lands Commission so desires, part of the project is to decommission and remove Pier 421-1 and well 421-1. Well 421-1 was a water disposal well, produced water disposal well that would not be needed if the oil is processed at the Elwood Onshore facility. The last part, of course, that was also part of a specific part of the project was the processing of produced oil and gas emulsion at the Elwood Onshore facility. So Venico is asking us to basically stop or to change from the historic configuration of processing oil on the piers in the shoreline and moving it to a new location. And in this case, Venico proposed the Elwood Onshore facility because it is actually a facility that they have the right to use under their legal nonconforming status. As you'll note, everything will be processed using existing equipment, and everything would occur within the existing production limits for platform hauling and the permitted throughput of the EOF. Just so everyone's clear, the permit allows up to 13,000 barrels per day of processing. Right now, Venico is somewhere around 4,000, a little less than, and has peaked out as high as maybe 5,500 barrels per day, so well short of its permitted maximum. The other thing that's important to note is that this project, 421, would not extend the life of the Elwood Onshore facility. The anticipated life of the 421 lease is 20 years. The Elwood Onshore facility is expected to last approximately 40 years because it's tied to the production at Platform Holly, and Platform Holly is expected to run through 2055. This is a quick schematic showing the different flow lines and how they're going to tie into the EOF. So if you have any questions, please let me know. This, again, just an aerial view that shows sort of the steps and pieces. This is a quick breakdown of the impacts associated with the proposed project. As you'll note, there are 16 significant unavoidable impacts and 20 potentially significant, so 36 impacts all told. I think the most important part about this is that of the 16 significant unavoidable impacts, 13 are related to potential for oil spill, because with any type of oil production, that is a huge risk. The other three significant unavoidable impacts are related to the small addition of processing at the EOF and the land use policies related to the EOF. As we note, the primary concerns with the current project are the use of the Elwood Onshore facility for processing. The concern has been continued and expanded use of the legal nonconforming facility and compatibility with the surrounding uses and potential safety concerns. Comments raised regarding the current final EIR are very similar to what you've heard before, with a few more focused points. Again, Venico's right to resume production at 421 was a comment. I think probably the most consistent comment was the life of the Elwood Onshore facility and its status as a legal nonconforming use, and how the project duration for resuming production at 421 would impact Elwood Onshore facility. Continued questions about reservoir repressurization. And finally, the big one that came out in April, which was processing PRC 421 oil at ExxonMobil's Los Flores Canyon facility. I'm going to go ahead and blow through the no project alternative. We've talked a little bit about it. It has comparable impacts to the proposed project because you are still producing and processing over the open shore. The important thing to know is that the no project alternative does not require the utilization of the Elwood Onshore facility. That is a meaningful alternative. It also returns the lease production and processing to its historic norm as it was in 1994, meaning that the lease is produced and processed on the piers, which is historically how this was done. Again, we've talked about this. The no production quitclaim alternative would require us to basically, you know, seek to buy out interest and quitclaim the lease with Vinico. And there's still a number of significant unavoidable issues, and this also would be a problem for us because we wouldn't have an opportunity to monitor future repressurization. Now, you know, it may end up being that that's not an issue, but we believe at this point that there's enough risk that it weighs heavily. Yeah, another alternative that was identified in the EAR was reinjection at Platform Holly. Again, you still would have to do some degree of processing either on the pier or at the EOF in order to do this, but at least the wastewater could be theoretically taken back to Platform Holly, but there are limitations on what Holly can handle in terms of capacity as well. This brings us to the big one that we were asked to look at, which is Los Flores Canyon. Basically, again, this bypasses the need to use the Elwood Onshore facility and could still theoretically allow for the decommissioning of PRC 421-1. However, it does require the construction of 10.2 miles of pipeline and a large variety of additional equipment that are going to be based on the piers. So the larger ESP, the submersible pump, the isokinetic sampler, the check meter, and the chemical tanks would all be on pier or in that area because there's no other location bypassing the EOF. This also deals with some significant issues about what the Los Flores Canyon will take. You'll hear questions, I think, a lot about what's Los Flores Canyon's capacity to actually take wastewater. We didn't address whether or not they have capacity for one big reason. They have an NPDES permit that currently says that they are not allowed to commingle state-produced wastewater with their current wastewater disposal. So aside from the capacity issue, they're not allowed. It would take them going back and getting an entirely new NPDES permit to allow for the utilization of and disposal of 421 wastewater, and or an agreement to build a Class 2 underground injection well by Vinico at the site, and or return of the produced water from Los Flores Canyon by way of a separate pipeline back from Los Flores Canyon to 421-1, meaning that 421-1 well would not be decommissioned, nor would the pier, and would act as a wastewater disposal for this. For those reasons, you'll also note that if for some reason you are able to process the gas out at the pier and then send the remaining emulsion, the wet oil, to Los Flores, you would still need a 1,000 to 1,500 barrel breakout tank on the piers, including flares to flare all the gas, and a much larger oil shipping pump. All told, this creates some significant impacts, and I think we'll come back to the rerouting to the LFC. I think this probably illustrates it best. Impacts associated with the LFC alternative in the way that was organized to be the least environmentally impactful still creates 31 significant unavoidable impacts and 52 potentially significant impacts, more than doubling the proposed project. This is largely why the LFC was screened out in the first place, taking into account fully the considerations that the city of Goleta have with continuing the use at the Elwood Onshore facility. I think our premise has long been not that we think that the EOF, the utilization of the EOF is a wonderful thing, but in terms of CEQA and the environmental context, there are significantly fewer environmental impacts, significantly fewer significant and unavoidable impacts by processing at the EOF. And, you know, there's a lot of additional identification, and I think this will come up with questions, but when we look at the Los Flores Canyon alternative, we tried to do this in a way that said, what's the least impactful way to do this? Other ways, like I said, processing gas out on the pier creates additional impacts. Having to find a new wastewater site, additional impacts. All of this creates additional impacts. This is the single or least impactful way of going about doing the Los Flores Canyon alternative, which is why we presented it that way in the EIR. This covers the big points, is that this is significantly more environmentally harmful. Which leads back to something that is not the most popular of statements, but that the proposed project was selected as the environmentally superior alternative because it controls for so many of the other impacts. The existing impacts related to production are the same across every venue. So the only real issue comes up about whether or not the use of the Elwood Onshore facility for processing basically outweighs all the other environmental concerns. We don't take a stance on whether that's true or not, because we believe, and we've stated this many times in the AIR and in the staff report, that the decision about the utilization of the Elwood Onshore facility is a question of the city of Goleta, who has jurisdiction over the Elwood Onshore facility, and it is their, you know, legal duty to kind of make that determination as to whether or not 421 would expand a legal nonconforming use. Staff did say in the EIR and stands by this, that we don't believe that the addition of the 421 oil source to processing at Elwood Onshore facility would lead to an expansion of the EOF, but that's just our interpretation. That is not a final finding. That is up to the city of Goleta to determine, which leads us to the recommended commission actions: to certify the environmental impact report, adopt the mitigation monitoring program in Exhibit C, and the statement of overriding considerations in Exhibit D, find that the activity is consistent with the use classification designated by the commission for the land pursuant to Public Resources Code 6370, find that adequate corrective measures have been taken to repair the infrastructure associated with PRC 421 as required under the California Code of Regulations, Title II, Section 2121, and that pursuant to the lease, Vinico is obligated to resume production of oil and gas from PRC 421. Finally, again, find that Vinico's proposed project utilizing the Elwood Onshore facility for processing oil is consistent with the lease, PRC 421, and the final EIR pursuant to the following conditions: that 421 will not be stimulated by using hydraulic fracturing or in the context of the Public Resources Code 3157, that Vinico must comply with all other applicable laws and obtain all required dogger permits, and that Vinico should be responsible for all costs associated with the execution of the adopted mitigation monitoring program. Thank you.
I think, yeah.
Ask a question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Two things. One, so we're talking about a basically 2% increase at the Elwood facility?
If that, at maximum.
Yeah. Okay.
The maximum daily production increase for the first 2 years of bringing 421 back online is 150 barrels a day, and then tapering down to 50 barrels a day or less.
Okay. And also gotten a few comments and concerns regarding GHG emissions. My understanding is that we are saying net zero GHG.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I think it's important, if I may follow up, the way that the mitigation measure stands is that we currently have said you must report to us your actual emissions yearly, and that's going to be addressed. We've done calculations based on modeling of what we believe the actual emissions will be at the peak year of production. So maximum worst case, we believe that the project will create 167.4 metric tons of carbon oxide or carbon dioxide equivalents at its peak, and will taper off of that. But to that end, we have a monitoring report that's required by Vinico to show the actual emissions level, and then they are going to have to buy credits and or carbon offsets through either the cap and trade program with CARB or the climate reserve. And again, those are both public options with third party vendors who verify the veracity of the purchases. So at the end of each year, we will literally true this up. It's a kind of an adaptive management approach on greenhouse gases, meaning that at the end of every year, we can say, yes, Vinico, you have bought 168 or 125 carbon offset units. We can follow that through the climate reserve. And we can verify all of that, which means that there's really not a threat of there not being a net zero on this. And, you know, some of the big concerns that have come up relative to another case, an outstanding case called Citizens for a Better Environment in CBE, really dealt with a case where there was no way to monitor what the actual emissions were. And we're also talking about emissions in the around 900,000 metric tons as opposed to 168 metric tons. And there was no way to kind of go back and ensure that people bought and did the credits. You know, the enforcement side of this is that they must actually do their, go in and prior to construction or anything else, be registered with some, like I said, cap and trade or climate reserve plan so that they can verify to us that they've actually bought those carbon offsets.
I think the best way to proceed on this item, so let the Venico spokesman come up if he or she has anything else to add. I think I have one supporter of the project who would like to speak. And then it is my understanding that the opponents from the city of Goleta would like to combine some of their time into one presentation. Our rules for the committee are essentially 3 minutes per speaker. So if I have a group of, I have the mayor, the planning director, the advanced planning manager, and several other folks from Goleta, to the extent that the city would like to combine their testimony with one of their speakers, that would be acceptable, or you can each use your 3 minutes. I'll let you decide that among yourselves. Why don't we go for the Venico spokesperson first, Chris Peltonen. We will then go to Chris Collier from Coastal Energy Alliance, and then we will go to the opposition. Okay, sir?
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair, commissioners, and staff. My name is Chris Peltonen. I'm the development manager for Venico. First off, I'd like to thank the staff for their hard work on this challenging EIR. They've done an excellent job assessing the environmental impacts, evaluating reasonable alternatives, and responding to public comment. As you're all most likely aware, we have some differences of opinion with some at the City of Goleta about various aspects of the local regulations governing our facilities. Venico is committed to continue working with the city to resolve these issues locally. In the meantime, the project before you today represents the environmentally preferred approach to Venico exercising its valid lease rights. We respectfully ask for your endorsement of the project today. Thanks for your time. As always, we're available to answer any questions you may have.
A little bit long-winded, but we can accept that. Chris Collier, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Collier. I represent a group called the Coastal Energy Alliance. We're stakeholders, suppliers, vendors, labor groups, and other folks that have a stake in safe and local energy production in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties. We're just here today to speak in support of Venico's application. last night, we were also at the City of Goleta's council and wanted you to know that, you know, there is, while there is a letter coming before you about some of their concerns with the project, it was definitely a split vote, and there was a lively discussion, two sides to it. I'd encourage you to take a look at both sides and approve this application today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Collier. Will the mayor for Ms. Perot come forward, please?
Good afternoon. My name is Allison Crumbine. I'm an attorney with the Sohagi Law Group representing the City of Goleta, and I was going to take the time of the two planning staff people and bundle that into, I guess, 9 minutes, and then Mayor Perotti would follow me if that's acceptable.
That was completely acceptable. All right. Great. So let me see. So, Ms., you're going, let me just make sure I got this. So we've got Allison Crumbine.
Yes. And it's Jennifer Carmen and Ann Wells.
Jennifer Carmen and... who is the other person we're gonna?
Ann Wells.
Ann Wells. Okay, so you've got 9 minutes or thereabouts.
Thank you so much.
To put that together. Okay.
Again, I'm here today representing the City of Goleta, and I'd like to respectfully disagree with Mr. Blackman's contention that the recirculated draft EIR and the ensuing final EIR have addressed the issues that the city has with this project. As you know, the City of Goleta is a responsible agency under CEQA on this project due to its approval authority over the landward project components within its jurisdiction, including portions of the piers, access road, construction staging areas, oil pipelines and flow lines, as well as the much talked about Elwood onshore oil and gas processing facility. The city submitted a comprehensive comment letter on the final EIR on December 12th, last Friday. Hopefully you've had the chance to take a look at that. as well as a supplemental letter yesterday, Tuesday, December 16th. The city would like to formally withdraw the letter we submitted yesterday. It's come to the city's attention there are some unresolved disputes with the project applicant over the recent notice of violation that came to light at the hearing last night. So if that would be acceptable, we would like to withdraw that letter. But the other letter we would like to submit for inclusion in the administrative record. The city very much appreciates this opportunity to comment on the project. I wanted to just reiterate our disappointment at commission staff's refusal to continue this hearing to the next the first quarter of next year. This is a complex project. It's changed significantly over the years. There was a very short turnaround time to review the final EIR. The project was scheduled for hearing very quickly. As you know, we're in the middle of a busy holiday season, and Hanukkah started just last night. That, tied with the location of the hearing 150 miles away from Goleta, has made it difficult for the city and its citizens to participate in this important process. But that said, we've got the following comments on the project and the final EIR. The city has consistently opposed this project since it was originally proposed in 2002, the same year that Goleta was formed. The city is gravely concerned about the risks and impacts of renewed production from PRC 421, particularly due to its location in the surf zone in the midst of sensitive intertidal habitat, beach, and recreational areas. The city is equally concerned about the project's proposed use of the aging EOF located in the city of Goleta in an area zoned for recreation. The EOF is a very old facility. It was constructed in the 1960s. It's been a legal nonconforming use for almost 25 years since 1991. And it was a legal nonconforming use when acquired by Venico. The EOF has never been used to process oil or gas from PRC 421, and the city believes that Venico's proposal to do so, along with the necessary modifications and improvements that would need to be made to the EOF required for the additional production, is not permitted under its nonconforming use regulations. Generally, while nonconforming uses are permitted to operate, there's an expectation that they will eventually terminate when they reach the end of their useful life. And in some cases, a jurisdiction may wish to exercise its police power to terminate a nonconforming use which creates a hazard or an ongoing threat to the public safety of its residents. There are currently proposals by Venico, including the project before you, that propose to extend the life of the EOF, possibly by 20 to 40 years, and that is an outcome which is unacceptable to the city. To that end, last night, the Goleta City Council passed an ordinance on first reading to streamline the city's nonconforming use termination procedures and directed staff to set a hearing to consider termination of the EOF sometime after the ordinance takes effect, likely in the spring of 2015, probably March. In light of the considerable uncertainty surrounding the future of the EOF, it would be irresponsible for the commission to approve a project which relies on the EOF for processing for the next 20 years. The city respectfully requests that the commission deny Venico's application to restart production from PRC 21 and direct staff to come up with a project that does not include use of the EOF. At minimum, however, the city requests that the commission continue this hearing until after it holds its 2015 hearing on the EOF termination, and that that hearing be held at a location either in or near the city of Goleta. The bottom line is that as a responsible agency on this project, there is no alternative that the city can consider approving. However, regardless of the actions that you choose to take today on the project, this EIR is legally inadequate to support approval of the project, either by the commission as lead agency or by the city as a responsible agency. And as I mentioned previously, we have a comprehensive comment letter that details the numerous legal inadequacies in the EIR. I just want to highlight a few of the problems with the document for you today. The EIR fails to comply with the primary purpose of CEQA, namely to inform decision makers and the public of the environmental impacts of their proposed actions prior to approving a project. The FEIR does not include up-to-date information on existing project site conditions. Rather, it consistently defers analysis of impacts by allowing current information to be collected later as part of project mitigation. For example, the EIR does not contain an up-to-date wetland delineation. One is required to be prepared as part of a mitigation measure. There are no up-to-date habitat or special status species surveys in the EIR. Those are also required to be collected as part of a mitigation measure. Waiting till after project approval to discover and identify the impacts of a project violates CEQA. And the deferred analysis in the document results in deferred mitigation. If you don't know the severity of an impact, how can you draft a specific enforceable mitigation measure to mitigate that impact? This mitigation measure, this problem is exemplified in one of the mitigation measures in the biological resources impact analysis, which basically requires Venico to submit a restoration plan consistent with what they find in their wetland delineation and special status species survey. So this is all happening after the project is approved. There's no way to assess what's going to happen if the project is approved. This is only one example of many instances of this type of deferred analysis and then deferred mitigation that permeates the document and essentially turns the CEQA process on its head. The FEIR's analysis of project alternatives is also flawed. As the city has informed the commission on numerous occasions, it cannot rely on the EOF for processing for the life of this project due to its non-conforming use status. However, the only alternative analyzed in the EIR that includes no use of the EOF would require processing on the piers, something that would increase the impacts of the project and is not acceptable to any of the parties. The city appreciated the commission's addition of the Las Flores Canyon alternative to the FEIR, but this alternative is also problematic in several respects. It continues to include use of the EOF facilities. It assumes a lack of capacity at the existing Las Flores Canyon facilities without supporting evidence, and it fails to include decommissioning. The city reiterates its request for a viable project alternative that does not include the EOF. Specifically, the commission needs to consider a project alternative that brings the PRC 421 oil onshore at a different point and transports it directly to Las Flores Canyon for processing. Other flaws in the document point out quickly, project description is problematic, the life of the project varies between the NOP and the EIR, the project fails to include foreseeable future activities such as decommissioning, there's no health risk assessment in the document, despite multiple requests from the Santa Barbara County Air Pollution Control District that one be done. GHG mitigation measures are impermissibly deferred. It relies on a plan to be created after the project is approved. I could go on. Clearly, this EIR is legally inadequate to support your approval of the project today, and it is legally inadequate to support the City of Goleta's approval of the portions of the project within its jurisdiction as a responsible agency. We would respectfully request that you continue this project until a legally adequate EIR is prepared. And as stated at the outset, we urge you to deny the project, direct the commission to produce a project description which does not include the EOF, or at minimum to continue this project until after the city has its opportunity to consider termination of the EOF. I thank you for your time. I'm now going to turn it over to Mayor Paula Perotti of the City of Goleta.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Mayor Paula Perotti for the City of Goleta. And last night, my staff emailed you a letter from the City Council with my signature. And I'd like to highlight some of the points, even though I'm not going to be able to read everything. Your staff has done a commendable job working with the city and its residents to eliminate hazardous petroleum facilities along the Goleta coast. And we thank you for that. However, the 421 recommissioning project you will be considering today includes processing at the Elwood facility, a step backwards in the progressive petroleum elimination in Goleta. On May 17, 2004, the Goleta City Council went on record with you seeking the commission's intervention on the project. Since that time, we have been working to identify safe alternatives that do not subject Goleta residents to the risky business of petroleum processing. The EOF has been a non-conforming since 1991 and was non-conforming when it was purchased by Venico. Venico has chosen to invest in maintaining this non-conforming aging facility in an urban setting while a community is growing around it. You are the lead agency on this project while the city is responsible agency because nearly all above ground facilities are located within the city. 2004 letter cited city impacts to our development community and our unique sensitive natural resources along the Pacific coast. The 421 wells have been 421 wells have been shut in since a spill occurred in 1994. Since that time, the piers and wells have been idle, rusting, and crumbling under the harsh intertidal surf conditions along Haskell's Beach. Pier and well maintenance was neglected while they remained idle. Venico waited for the methane to build up at well 421-1 and oil seepage to leak at well 421-2 before commencing with repairs in 2000. Venico neglected the broken and crumbling well caissons and piers before required emergency orders were issued in 2010 and 2011 that required structural fortification, circumventing the public review process and extending the life of the 421 facilities. The city has commented extensively on the adequacy of the 421 project EIRs. Had my staff not been so diligent in the EIR review, you potentially would have approved and consented a project that would have threatened emergency backup storage for the entire Platform Holly facility, as the miscalculation overestimated the EOF capacity to justify 421 backup. Please note that currently there is less than 1 day of storage at the EOF for Holly alone. This and other critical errors in the EIR come at the cost of the city's regulatory authority and, more importantly, at the cost of the sensitive environmental and public safety. These errors are cause to pause. Throughout the project EIR preparation process, the city has raised issues about the right of Venico to extend the longstanding nonconforming use of the EOF for processing of the 421 oil and gas product. Staff has continued to advise the State Lands Commission of the city's concern that the EOF is aging facility, that is nonconforming status cannot continue indefinitely, and that there is a strong possibility that the improvements required as part of the 421 project would constitute an illegal and impermissible expansion and extension of the nonconforming use. Due to the public safety risk and status of nonconforming use, the City Council has scheduled a hearing on March 5th, 2015 to terminate the nonconforming use of the EOF. The stakes are high where oil extractions occur in the surf zone and where processing occurs within close proximity to residential populations. The human health effects, environmental damage, and financial liabilities associated with oil spills, gas releases, and contamination are significant and unsupportable. I speak for the City Council. The project description and the alternatives are based on faulty land use and zoning assumptions that invalidate the project and EIR. Deny both. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Jenna Driscoll, Watershed and Marine Program Associate, Santa Barbara Channel Keeper.
Hello, Jenna Driscoll from Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. Channel Keeper urges the State Lands Commission to deny certification of the EIR and, or at a minimum, delay the decision until a greater decision is made by the City Council to determine the future of the EOF. Yesterday, the City of Goleta made significant decisions that apply to this project. Through these decisions, the City has made clear that there is interest in ending the life of the EOF. These actions show that the continued future use of the EOF is uncertain, perhaps even unlikely. As such, it is imperative that the alternative of processing oil at the consolidated Las Flores Canyon facility is fully and more completely analyzed. Channel Keeper is also concerned that several mitigation measures allow for delayed analysis of critical issues. These studies include, but are not limited to, the health risk assessment, hazardous material removal action plan, environmentally sensitive habitat areas mapping, and updates to the oil spill contingency plan. These deferred mitigation measures are concerning as the public and responsible agencies cannot evaluate whether these plans will adequately mitigate for significant impacts. We are particularly concerned that the project is located near sensitive habitat areas, critical endangered species habitat, and marine protected areas. These areas have received special status because of their ecological and recreational importance. These analyses mentioned in mitigation measures to protect these resources should be conducted now so that they can be properly vetted and considered in the decision-making process. The City of Goleta mentions these issues, as you just heard. Certifying the EIR without forcing Venico to provide these reviews in advance limits the information available to the city. The point of an EIR is to help a decision-making body make a fully informed decision. These types of reviews would provide critical information that will help the city determine whether mitigation measures are sufficient to reduce many significant impacts and would influence their decision as to whether to allow processing at the EOF. Please do not limit the amount of information available to them or to your own agency to make an informed decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kropp, Chief Counsel, Environmental Defense Center of Santa Barbara, please.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'm Linda Kropp, Chief Counsel of the Environmental Defense Center, here today on behalf of Get Oil Out, the Sierra Club, Citizens Planning Association, and Citizens of Goleta Valley. EDC and our clients have been working on this issue since 1994, when there was an oil spill from the production from the pier and it was shut down. And we have submitted comments on all the iterations of the EIR. Our most recent letter, submitted on Monday, addressed the final EIR. We request that you deny certification of the EIR for the reasons set forth in the letter. And some of the main concerns we have are the uncertainty in the project description, the improperly narrow project objective, the location for processing as part of the project description, not a basic project objective, and incidentally was not included in the original EIR. The improperly narrow project objective constrains consideration of alternatives in violation of CEQA. We're also concerned about the deferred analysis of impacts and mitigation measures, and these issues are therefore taken out of the public purview. We believe that the EIR provides misleading representation still regarding repressurization and overstatement of the benefits of the project. We appreciate that this latest version of the EIR does acknowledge that any alleged benefit would at least be temporary, but we still think that the benefit is overstated. The EIR fails to include Platform Holly operations in the cumulative impact analysis, and still, despite this commission's direction in April, fails to include specific enforceable mitigation measures for greenhouse gas emissions. And finally, the responses to comments are inadequate and incomplete. The most important issue, as you've heard from prior speakers, is the need to adequately consider the alternative of processing at Las Flores Canyon. The final EIR still prefers processing at the EOF despite its non-conforming status and inconsistency with the City of Goleta General Plan and Coastal Land Use Plan policies. Therefore, the default based on the EIR would necessarily involve processing on the pier, which no one wants. It took years to insert an analysis of Las Flores Canyon as an alternative in the EIR, thanks again to your direction in April. But we still believe that the EIR does not adequately or accurately assess this alternative. And this is all the more important now that the city has taken steps to terminate the EOF. With respect to Las Flores Canyon, we believe that alternative is feasible. As a consolidated site, ExxonMobil is required to provide access. There is absolutely no evidence that there's a capacity issue, and one of the commissioners mentioned the small amount of oil coming from this project. When you compare that to the 100,000 barrels per day design capacity and 140,000 barrel per day permitted capacity for the plant, you can see that capacity should not be an issue. There is no problem with commingling the oil. Santa Barbara County studied that back in the 1987 period when they were considering their consolidation policy, and we provided you with evidence of that. The pipeline is feasible. Similar pipeline was just built last year by Venneco. The NPDES permit can easily be revised to be consistent with the consolidation policy. So we also request that you deny certification of the EIR in the project, or in the alternative that you postpone this matter until the city takes action on the EOF termination procedure ordinance. Thank you.
Any other speakers on this subject?
Just a clarification of several of the speakers talked about, they use language about expanding the life of the EOF, and I wondered if you could just comment on that. I understood from the staff analysis or the staff report that the amount of time that Holly will continue to be productive at that facility would be longer than the period of time. So just if you could clarify that.
Yeah, that's right, Commissioner. The EOF processing is actually tied to Platform Holly, not to 421. The historic vested right to process is related to the production from 3242 from Platform Holly. And so the whole point, and this has been very clearly articulated repeatedly throughout the document, is that Platform Holly has an estimated lifetime of 40 years. It could be less, it could be greater. It has to do with a variety of shifting factors. But at the last estimate that was done based on the value of oil, the technological ability to extract that oil, it was a 40-year timeline, 2055. So the expectation for the 421 lifetime is 20 years. And honestly, at that point, it would be done. But it's also, I think, very important to note that consistent with sort of what you've heard, if at any point the processing at the EOF was determined by the city of Goleta to be inappropriate, or if they do ultimately follow through with the termination, that doesn't change Vinico's obligation to produce and process oil from 421 and Holly. They'll have to find different processing venues to do that. There's limited processing capabilities on Platform Holly, which they use to a certain extent. The rest goes to the EOF to be processed before that oil is sent to Las Flores Canyon. I think there's a little bit of a misleading issue here when Mrs. Kropp is talking about the fact that, you know, all this oil from Holly already goes to Las Flores Canyon. That's after it's processed and dewatered. So Las Flores Canyon is not serving as a primary processing center for Holly oil. The EOF is. Similarly with 421, if the EOF no longer existed tomorrow, processing in the historic configuration on the piers would be, quite frankly, the primary objective, short of some other option. And quite frankly, we've already identified in this document that processing on the piers, while not optimal, is better than the Las Flores Canyon alternative. And I think that's an identification that is not popular but true based on the analysis that we've done. Other questions?
It strikes me we need to delineate what is not before us today, and that is the wisdom of extracting oil on the coast of California. Those decisions were made a long time ago. Mr. Scunny, can you give us, has the Attorney General looked at the lease that Venico has with to extract the oil, and what the ramifications would be for the state if we were to prohibit Venico from executing on that lease?
Yes, both my office and your staff have reviewed the leases and researched the question of Venico's rights under those leases, and it's our collective opinion that they have a vested right to access and remove the hydrocarbons that are accessed by the lease, and that if the commission were to fail to allow that, they could potentially be liable for damages as to the value of those hydrocarbons.
Thank you, sir. Which then leads us to the decision we have to make, which is, since Venico is going to extract the oil, where's the best place for them to process it? I've been convinced through the analysis that the staff has done that the environmental risks at Los Flores Canyon are serious, that an oil pipeline over several sensitive watersheds is not a wise direction to go, even if you could get the permits and the capacity exists at Las Flores Canyon. And if that's not wise, and we do not process the oil at the EOF, then we're left with on pier. I haven't seen a third option, a fourth option, Las Flores Canyon on pier EOF. No fourth option has been prepared to has been presented to us. I recognize that the city of Goleta is going to have an issue if they choose to cancel the permit, the non-conforming use permit. I'm pretty confident, listening to the testimony here today, there'll be a lawsuit from the city against Venico, and Venico will need to take into account the risk of that facility's permit being terminated. That will end up in court. I also have no doubt at this point in time that there's going to be a lawsuit based on the EIR. But with regard to a putting over of this issue until some future date, which would be the easiest thing for my boss to do, because then we don't have to go on the record, and I can turn this over to Controller-elect Yi. I'm not sure there's an EIR that could ever be done that's not going to have a lawsuit filed. I think counsel laid out a very strong case. She laid out what the terms of the lawsuit will be on the EIR, and I'm not sure there's anything staff could do that's going to stop that. So I'm ready to support the proposal. If the non-conforming use can be terminated, then that will be between the city and Venico at some future date, along with any issues that may need to be addressed in the environmental impact report. So with that, I'm ready to call for a motion on adoption of the staff report on this issue.
I just wanted to make one other comment, Chair, regarding the location of the meeting and comments that were made about citizens from the area not being able to be here. I do want to acknowledge that we heard this issue in April at a meeting, I believe, in Los Angeles, and there were many community representatives there, and I think all of us remember those comments. And so I do want to acknowledge that we did hear additional public input and respect the concerns that those folks have. Having said that, I agree with Chair Gordon's comments, and I will make a motion to approve the staff recommendation.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Let's see. Ms. Lucchese, the next order of business.
The next order of business is the public comment period. And I believe we have one speaker that wishes to speak during
yes,
public
comment. Yes, we have Mr. Deals, treasurer from Redondo Beach, I believe.
Yes, thank you very much. I have half a voice this afternoon. Hopefully I'll get through this. I was before you at the Los Angeles meeting in April, and at that time I expressed the desire to work with the State Lands Commission in an open, transparent way. Before you today was an item on C-66. I was here prepared to speak to that should it be pulled, in which your staff conducted an audit regarding a review of our internal service funds and our enterprise funds, specifically the Tidelands funds. We work with the State Lands Commission to oversee leases in the Tidelands area of Redondo Beach. And just last night, we completed our most recent audit. We audit every year independently our internal service funds and the enterprise funds. And so I would like to submit to you copies of these most recent audits. And that concludes my comments, unless you have any questions.
I think if you submit that to Ms. Lunetta beside you.
Sorry? Okay.
Yep. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on any issue? Any of the commissioners have any comments or questions? That concludes our meeting. And you get the gavel. All yours. Don't let the power go. Thank you.